Okay, we're going to resume with the second class for today in about 5 minutes or so. And this is actually a different format. We're primarily interested in hearing what your concerns are. And it's more targeted towards those of you who are not observant or maybe had a run-in with being observant and didn't hit you the right way. And to ask you just to re-examine what the causes are for your... the fact that you don't have a commitment to observant lifestyle, to be honest about it, and hopefully we can respond with some insight and basis for observancy in your life. Again, we'll start this format in just a few minutes at 12:30 p.m. as New York time. And if you do have any type of questions, you can feel free to type in the bottom of your screen, and we'll try to address them one at a time. Feel free to type them, and then you'll be able to put them right on the screen. But we'll start with just a few minutes of outlining how the forum will work and the topic that we want to take up and address and what exactly we are eliciting from you. Once you hear the audio fine, just type in audio okay at the bottom of your screen. That will confirm for us that you're picking up the audio stream okay. Again, once you hear the audio feed, please type in audio okay at the bottom. And again, we want in this session today, the second session, is to hear from you what your concerns are regarding orthodox lifestyle, what you've heard that has steered you away from being observant. Maybe there's something which is a misnomer. You have an incorrect idea about what Orthodox Judaism asks, what the fundamentals are based on. And thank you, AI. I guess that's in Arizona. And JHSWH in Netherlands, I guess. And again, it's an anonymous forum here, so this way we can be completely open and share exactly what our sentiments are. And it may be difficult that sometimes to pinpoint, oh, what is the reason that I've decided not to be observant, or maybe we cannot determine at what point in our life we made that decision, we just find ourselves now, years or decades later, not living an observant lifestyle. And there's much that may go into the mix. I mean, we were talking earlier about what I would consider a very foolish type of reasoning. People have heard many times they'd like to have the ability to drive on Saturday. So this now determines their whole philosophy in life, because they'd like to be able to get in the car and go somewhere on one day of the week, when in truth, this could be taken care of on other days or in the evening Saturday after the Sabbath is over. There has to be more to it. There has to be more to life than just wanting to go to the mall. Or some people have a concern about, well, I'd like to be able to eat what I want and whatever foods I want, and I don't want somebody telling me that I can't eat it. Again, that's a mixture of arrogance and a person not understanding, first of all, that they are created. Why are they here? Why is a person here? You didn't create yourself. So the first step would really for a person to recognize that they are created. They've only been here a few years, a few decades at most. And what's the reason that you're here? Is there a purpose, and can I really be happier than I am now? Did I really think out my lifestyle and analyze exactly how to live to be the happiest? I mean, you see that people will be very, very analytical when it comes to work, and which job should I take, and what should I study to know how to be better off in the stock market, and I'm going to study this stock inside out. And a person attests with that very studious type of approach to his stocks, a person attests to the fact that there are a lot of factors that can cause events to go one way or the other. So that equally applies to a person's life. There are many events, there are many decisions, many factors in a person's life that can make his life happier or not so happy. The question is, what are those factors? Have people really studied this? This is not something taught in schools, unfortunately. What you're taught in school is everything necessary in order to have a job and make money. The schools do not teach you any type of mandatory philosophy or psychology classes that would help you educate yourself on what the human being is made up in terms of emotions and feelings, how to manage your feelings, how to manage your emotions. A person is also not taught about analyzing philosophies, which religious belief is true, which is not. And what ends up is you have almost an entire world that basically just has one interest, because the rest of the world is doing it too, and that's basically money or fame, and that seems to be what people are, the brass ring that people are grabbing afterwards, as opposed to trying to understand, how can I be happiest? A person is duped into believing they'll be happy because everybody else is doing the same action. Well, the masses are doing something, you know, it can't be incorrect. But that itself is disproved, because you see how you have so many religions and so many masses of people following the religions. So the religions themselves, each one says ours is right and every other religion is wrong. So if that's true, that means every single group of people is basically saying that masses does not make right, because that's why Christianity will denounce Islam. Even though there's more Muslims, that doesn't make it right. We have the truth. Now, is it based on anything, or is it just an emotional statement? So there's a myriad of facets, a myriad of factors that are at play for a person to really use to his benefit. But it means to stop and think and to reflect on the self and to actually ask the questions. All right, so people are following, you are following a certain philosophy today. The question is, did you analyze your philosophy? I mean, everybody will accept a doctor's advice. Why? Because the person's body is so important to them. And if the doctor says you're going to die unless you take these 10 pills, and you have to take them exactly in this order each day of your life, and if you do, you'll live till you're 150 years old. So, of course, a person won't play with with that. He's not going to play with his life. So why is it when it comes to something which is more permanent, I mean, a person's soul, there a person doesn't take the advice of someone who knows better. There everybody feels that I'll do what I want in my life, I'll follow whatever path I want. So the person themselves realizes this tremendous amount of knowledge that goes into the human body. But the body isn't the only part of a human being. People know that there's emotions, there's so many religions out there. How do I determine? Well, it may take time. There's not a there's not a deadline, but a person should each day try to uncover more. Make sure you're living a life that is really happiest. Okay, so again, to those of you that have just logged on, we are just commencing today's session. And primarily, I don't want this session today to be me talking. Again, my name is Rabbi Moshe Mechayim. I want you to be expressing your concerns or reluctance to be observant, what exactly they are. Be honest, this is an anonymous forum, nobody knows each other. And the objective here is to really air out what concerns you have, what inconveniences there are that perhaps are keeping you from being observant. Maybe you were told something in the past, and at any point, please type at the bottom of your screen what is on your mind in terms of your non-observance, or even if you are observant. But I would ask those people who are observant to hold off on the entries, and I would prefer at first that those of you that are not observant, that have questions, or that would like to hear an explanation for something, to do so, because that's what the whole purpose of today's session is to give those people that are not observant an opportunity to air out what exactly is keeping them from being not observant. Did you even think into being observant? Is there a restriction that the observant lifestyle poses to your mind that you just don't like? And now you've made a decision, I'm not going to be observant because I want to have a certain freedom. But what you're doing is you're closing the book on something that you did not even have a chance to see. So there have to be certain basics that we know for sure, which I'm going to start with, and then I want to hear your feedback. Okay. I just want to wait a few more moments just to make sure everybody else is logged on. So if you just be patient and be hold on for a few more minutes. We called the class for 12:30. Right now it's only 12:36. Some people may log on a little bit afterwards. And I'd like to make sure that the beginning of the class, where I just present a few concepts, is heard by everybody. And once you log on, if you can hear the audio, just type in audio okay at the bottom. That confirms for us that you're picking up the audio fine. And Rosora in Italy, good to see you. Thanks a lot. Chana, California. Joseph, Nan. Okay, and Diane D and CW. And Joseph is writing on screen, I have a request that is that the questions be directed to you and that the participants refrain from having private conversations. Okay, well, that's usually the protocol here, Joseph, but thank you for mentioning that. So hopefully everybody will respect that. That's a good point, that the questions on screen should be regarding your own questions about observance or your reasoning why you don't feel you should be observant or that you don't think that God exists, so there's not a proof, and therefore Judaism is no better than any other religion. Whatever it is, this is an opportunity to air that out and to hopefully allow me to respond, and hopefully I'll be able to give you some clarification. Okay, we'll just wait a few more moments for the rest of the people to log on. Let's wait like 2 more minutes, okay? In the meantime, if you have any questions, maybe you want to open up like a Word document, just type it in, and then when we're ready, you can just copy it and paste it right into the window at the bottom. Okay, the AND, thank you for the audio confirmation. And if at any point during the class your screen goes blank or you have an error on screen, either hit your Enter key or you can click the Talk Live link on the top left. You'll see a row of links on the left-hand side of the website, those white links, there's about 20 of them. The very first one is Talk Live. Click on there and then re-enter the forum if at any point the screen has an error on it. Nothing is perfect, including computer technology, so sometimes that does happen. Hopefully not more than once or twice in a session. Maybe we'll come out of today's session unscathed without any errors. But you'll come right back in. It's not a permanent error. Okay, Razora is asking, how does this topic relate to Gentiles? It relates to Gentiles because Gentiles and Jews have one system. God only gave one system, which will be the first point that I will start with, just to clarify that. There is only one system. I mean, there's only one human being that God created. And I mean, God did not create religions. Religions are man-made. God created Adam and Eve. He created just man and woman. And everybody in the world today are descendants from the original pair. So we have to have the exact same design, physically, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually. It doesn't matter that we have different color skin or we live in different places. At a certain point in time, God gave a system of laws. And that was the only time in all of history that God had a revelation to masses. All the other religions outside of Judaism have claims that God spoke to a certain individual, but you don't have a proof, so there's no reason to accept it. It's very important that you recognize that because one person says something, or a few people say something, that is not proof. And even if millions of people now, today, you'll say to me, well, aren't millions of people Christian? Aren't billions Muslim? Whatever the number is. So isn't that proof? No. You can have millions of people believing something, and that's all they have. But there are not millions of people that say that we saw Jesus get resurrected, that we saw a miracle. There was never an event in Christianity's conflicting gospels that there were witnesses, there were masses that saw something. No, they didn't even write down the gospels until hundreds of years later. And even that, there's conflicting stories. It shows you it's not true. We have no conflicting stories about Caesar being emperor of Rome, so we accept that as being 100% true history. There's only one story. It's easy to understand the information. There's no confusion about who Caesar was, no confusion about where Rome is, so therefore we accept that as being valid. You had masses of people that saw this. Masses of people saw Alexander the Great. But you did not have masses of people witnessing the purported miracles of Jesus or of Muhammad or any other. So it's important that when you're living your life, you're not just using intelligence in everything but your religious life. Religious life, as well as the rest of your life, has to be subject to reason, to proof. You have intelligence. Use it. So if we know that there is only one event, that was Sinai. That is the only time in all of world history where you had masses of people. You had about 2 million people. Then the Torah says there were 600,000 men, and that was just men above 20. Aside from children, it says. And that's not counting women either. So there you have numbers, and this is passed down that they were at the event, and they heard a voice coming out of fire at this event at Sinai. This is not paralleled anywhere in any other religion or culture. This is the basis for our proof. This is the proof that Judaism was the only system that was divinely given. And we know it because masses witnessed the event, and you can't have masses of people conspiring. A few people may get together and conspire, but you do not have masses of people conspiring. Now, based on this first point, do any of you have any questions on that before I move forward? Let me stop for a minute and ask you. Is that something which makes sense? Is that a proof to your minds or not? And if not, explain why not. All right, so I'm going to pause now. I would like to hear all of you respond and say, yes, Sinai is 100% proof that Judaism is the only divinely given system, or no, you don't believe it, and then explain why. All right, so I'm going to pause now, and I'm going to look on screen to see what your responses are. If you agree, just write agree. If not, please write why you don't agree. But please make, you know, one response or the other. I mean, this class is for you. So if you don't agree and you don't speak up, I can't, you know, I can't help. I would like to address any specific questions that you have. So let's take advantage of this and then do this. Okay, Hanna, California, CW, thank you. Okay, Razora in Italy is writing. Okay, Nan, thank you. Razora writes, the people is not alive now. It is just written in the Bible. There are other religions in the book. This is true, Razora. So now I'll ask you, Razora. The people who saw Caesar are not alive now. Do you accept Caesar as being a true figure and that he was the leader of Rome? Nan? Nizar, that's a separate question. That's not really what I want to address right now, why the temple is not being rebuilt, okay? Right now, I want to go into a systematic order in terms of addressing people's concerns, whether or not they accept the first point that God gave the Torah at Mount Sinai. All right, and again, what we're saying, the proof is that there were masses that witnessed this event. Just like every other event in history is proved by mass witnesses, and that's why we accept Caesar, and we accept Alexander the Great, and we accept all the historical truths, and the Jews leaving Egypt. So we accept all this because we have a unanimous story, that we have witnesses at the events. Okay, Rezor, if you want to say you... So you're saying that you accept Caesar, but it's different. What's the difference? What is the difference whether people saw Caesar or people saw a mountain on fire and saw miracles? If you had witnesses and they are all in agreement and there were masses and what they saw was they understood what they were seeing, they know what a voice is, they know what fire is, they know what a mountain is. Okay, Nizar, you're writing, its replacement exists in Amritsar, that is highly corrupt. I'm not sure what that is. Rezora is writing, there are other books in other religions that talk about other things. Why should the Bible be true? Well, I'm saying the distinction is that the stories in other books are not stories about events where there are masses of people that saw a miracle. That you do not have. It does not say in any of the stories by Jesus that there were masses of people that saw something. There was one incident where they say that he fed 5,000 people with some fish or a small amount of bread. And the question is, this is not written down until 200 years after the fact. So where are these 5,000 people from that point forward? If they were there and they saw it, this should have been communicated at that time. The fact that you have a 200-year gap shows you that it's a fabrication. Okay. So you have to keep in mind, I mean, Hitler got his entire country to believe that they were a supreme race. But he was not getting them to believe that they saw something. You can't get people to believe they saw something if they didn't. Judaism is the only religion that has as its basis a proof of millions of witnesses at an event that was a miracle. From that point forward, it wasn't written down hundreds of years later. And we have the history where they left. When they left Sinai, where did they go, and who begot who? You have a clear story. All right, Jehani is saying, where is the contemporary evidence that there were mass witnesses originally? I don't understand what you mean by contemporary evidence. And Les, you're writing, what if it was true? I'm not sure what they mean. What if what was true, Les? Again, if the screen does go blank, just click on the Talk Live link on the top left-hand part of your screen. That'll bring you back in. You can try hitting the Enter key. That might work also. Okay. Okay, Jay Hani, you're asking, how do you prove that there are witnesses at Sinai? How do you prove that there are witnesses for Caesar, Jay? Unless, if there were 5,000 people witnessing any miracle of Jesus, you would have had it circulated from that point of the very precise moment of that miracle forward. Those 5,000 people would have told other people, but this did not happen. The fact that there was complete, there was no story whatsoever until 200 years later shows you that these 5,000 people couldn't have existed. Had they existed and had they seen miracles, they would have told others. That would have been a very, very broadly discussed part of history. Much more than just Caesar being the Emperor of Rome. If people talk about Caesar being the Emperor of Rome, certainly would speak about an event where there were 5,000 people that saw miracles. But you don't have that. Okay. And Jesus, no, was not what you call as the Christ, as being any type of Messiah. He did not fulfill any of the of the requirements to be a Messiah, he actually went against what God says. God says in his Torah that each man in his own sin will die, and Christianity says no, Jesus can die for your sin. And God says in his Torah that the way you are forgiven is if you repent, and you look into yourself and you repent. Christianity says that you can lose your sins just by believing in a man. Completely against the concept of the Torah. So Jesus completely against the Torah system. Okay. So are we clear of that? Again, I was asking, I think it was Jehani. I asked you, you're asking me to prove that there are witnesses at Sinai. I am asking you if you accept that Caesar was the emperor of Rome. And if you do accept that Caesar was the emperor of Rome, then you have to accept the same thing at Sinai, because the exact same criteria are being used. We're looking at masses. Okay, Nijar, thank you for the facts. I don't really want to get so much specifically into who Mary was and so on. I'd like to stick to the schedule here about first having a clear understanding where Judaism derives a proof from and how the other religions do not have it, and then to ask those of you who are not observant what your reasoning is. Rosora, you're writing, in school they teach about Caesar as a fact, not about Sinai. There is a different source about the existence of Sinai, but just Bible testifies about Sinai. I don't see what the difference would be, whether it's a different source or not. As long as you have masses that are transmitting that there was an event that people were at, if you have the world today in unison, the whole world today transmits from one generation to the next that Caesar was the emperor of Rome. It doesn't matter where you get the transmission from. If it's something which goes back to an event where there are masses there, then that's the same exact situation. It doesn't matter whether it's religion, if it's a Bible, if it's a history book. Okay. And Chana in California is writing, I think that they actually took the feeding of the multitudes story from Elisa and Tanakh. Could be. I mean, there are a lot of plagiarisms in the New Testament. Right. Okay, so it doesn't seem that anybody really has a rebuttal that rejects the fact that Judaism is working the same way as any historical account. Just like we accept Caesar, nobody alive today ever saw him, but yet we have a story that's unanimously accepted. There is no alternative story as to who was the emperor of Rome. There's no alternative name as to what the name of that city was. Everybody agrees it was Rome. Everybody agrees the ruler was Caesar. Everybody agrees on the dates. Everybody agrees how he died. This is why everybody who's together now in this forum agrees that Caesar is true. We do not deny that. That would be foolish. And this is the method by which we prove anything in history. For the same reasoning that the use of masses at the event, mass witnesses at the event, and it was transmitted down from that event till today. That's how we prove something in history. That's why we say that the Jews in Egypt, the plagues, the splitting of the Red Sea, Sinai, that God gave the Torah on Sinai, all this is 100% true and proven, for the same reason that we say that Caesar is true and proven. Masses saw it take place. They all transmitted it. There's only one story. There was no break in the transmission until today. Now, once we know for a fact that we have a divine revelation, and God only gave one system, He did give it to the Jews, but it's ultimately to be followed by every human being. Again, God did not create different types of human beings. He created Adam and Eve. The entire world now comes from Adam and Eve. So that means every human being is identical. So that makes sense why there's only one system, there's only one religion, because God, knowing exactly that every human being is identical, it doesn't matter what we look like on the outside or what type of foods we like better than others, but everybody enjoys family. Everybody places love higher than hatred. We see that everybody has two lungs, everybody has a heart. The design physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually is identical in every human being. Therefore, the best way to live life, there can only be one best way. Just like if a person has his arm cut open, it doesn't matter if he's black or white or Jewish or Christian or whatever his beliefs are, his body design will demand that he get stitches. If a person has lung cancer, it doesn't matter whether he's an Eskimo or Asian or African, he will be treated the same exact way. So the same way our design, in one moment we'll take a question by Koshalos. But the same way we are identical, we're all identical in terms of our physical design, we are also all identical in terms of how we are structured mentally, what our needs are. In terms of companionship, everybody needs companionship. All right, there's no difference if you live in the north or the south of the globe. Companionship is a necessary thing. All right, when a person hears something funny, everybody laughs. The same exact response. So also, when it comes to the best type of a lifestyle, it has to be that there's one best lifestyle for everybody. That is why precisely God gave only one system, because there's only one mankind. Now, the reason why he gave it to the Jews was because at that point in history, the entire world was steeped in idolatry. But Abraham was able to examine his idolatrous lifestyle. He paused, he thought, and he studied for 40 years until he finally crystallized in his mind tremendous concepts and proofs that there has to be a creator that's not of this physical world, and a creator that created everything that we see. And he was so awed by the abilities of this creator that he went around and he taught ideas, and he recognized that since there's so many people on earth, that means God's will. This creator is that many people exist. That means there has to be a care that each individual has for another person. Just like God wants everybody to exist, I, as a creation of God, have to comply and have to follow what the creator showed. He wants everybody to exist, therefore I can't kill people. I can't steal. I must now ensure that they have a life just like I want a life. And Abraham was able to compile idea after idea until he finally came up with a system and started teaching people. And he proved to them that idolatry was false. Now, because Abraham did this, that's why God selected him and his children to receive a system of Torah and then to educate the world. Again, the Torah is just given to them at that time because they were the ones that were following monotheism. They were following reality, that there is one creator. He's not physical. He created the entire universe. The rest of the world was bowing down to stone and wood gods. Okay, so, and Abraham also embodied the idea better than anyone that with your mind alone, he had no teacher, as Maimonides teaches us. Abraham had no teacher, and even without a teacher, he was able to use his mind alone to unravel truths. This was a great example that God wanted to set up for the rest of the world. To look at this man Abraham. When he was a child, he was an idolater. He worshipped idols. But with his own mind and nothing else, he was able to think and realize truths. So God said, therefore, I'm going to make you into a great nation, and you'll teach the rest of the world. Okay. So this is how the whole thing started. And it's really for everybody, though. The system of the Torah, it's true, there are 613 commands that the Jew has to follow, and there's a minimum of 7 commands for a non-Jew. But that's only because God says that if you want to have a right to life, if you want a right to existence, you have to at least keep these 7 minimal laws. You have to have a court system. You can't kill. You can't steal. You can't have relations with another man's wife. There has to be a minimal set of laws you must follow. But any person who's not Jewish who wants to accept on more can definitely do so. And any person who wants to accept all 613, that would be fantastic. God's will is that everybody has the most perfected life. And again, being that he created us and knows exactly what our design is, don't you think that he knows best what would make us happy or not? All right? I'm putting that question to all of you now. And let me just welcome who came in. That's Sri from Minnesota and Joseph. Rona in Winnipeg. Let's just pause now. I want to, unless if you want to put your question now on screen, you had a question about kosher, you could take a pause for that. But let me just make sure you're digesting all of this and that you understand the proof. So if you do hear what I'm saying and it makes sense, just write agree on screen. Just give me some feedback that you were saying. If you have a question on what I said, please put your question on screen now. Okay, I'm going to pause. AI in Arizona is asking, should or can a Gentile observe all the laws? A Gentile can observe almost all the laws he wants. There are a few that you can't, which would include the Sabbath or studying areas of the Torah that don't apply to you. That's simply because unless you're Jewish, you can't do things that make you appear as a Jew, because then that would confuse people as to who they should go to with questions. Okay? All right, but if a Gentile wants to keep all the laws, that means you're converting. That's great. There's no difference between a Gentile and a Jew. People sometimes in the Jewish circles will say that something like a Jewish soul is better. That's completely false. The Messiah is coming from a non-Jew. I hope everybody understands that, that our greatest leaders, King David and King Solomon, come from non-Jews, come from Ruth, the Moabite woman. She converted, and she was such a perfected individual, even though she wasn't born Jewish. But you see, that doesn't matter. God doesn't play favorites. He creates man and woman, and each person has the ability to live the life and to really perfect themselves. Okay. Joseph is writing on screen. There seems to be an obsession with the non-Jew to prove that she or he is right. I'd like to pose a question of my own. On the basis of the New Testament narratives, everything that is stated in it is secondhand testimony. In a court of law, this would be hearsay and inadmissible testimony. I think we should go back to the topic at hand and stick to it. Okay, that's what we're doing. Thank you, Joseph. And welcome to Rita and Chaya in Florida, Rita in Germany. And again, the forum today, just to reiterate again, is to ask those of you who are not observant. I mean, again, those of you who are observant, I want you to observe and listen to the conversation, but this forum today is specifically directed and making available a chance for those of you who are not observant to ask your questions about observancy. Maybe you have a misconception about what being observant is. Maybe you don't know anything about it you'd like to know. Maybe somebody taught you wrong ideas. Maybe you don't like a certain aspect, like keeping kosher or keeping the Sabbath, and that's an inconvenience, and therefore that's your reasoning why you're not observant. Well, the question is, what should you be doing in life? Should you be looking just for these conveniences, or is there something bigger to do with your life, these few decades that we're here? I mean, it is temporary. Okay, let me just take a few things on screen. Less, number one. If the milk and meat law came from the scriptures saying do not boil a kid in its mother's milk, if I promise not to do that, why can't I have a cheeseburger? Because the law is not just what's written, there's also rabbinic laws which are derived from that. And from the rabbinic laws, they set up fences to protect. So what they added on, the rabbis have the right. It says in Deuteronomy that the rabbis have the right to create fences to God's laws. So they added on not to cook milk and meat together. That's why cheeseburgers are prohibited. No other reason. Nishar is saying, Abraham, for his humanity, was known as the father of the faithful. Abraham kicked the unfaithful people out of his promised land. Abraham didn't do that. No, God removed the people that were sinful from Israel. Okay, let's, Nishar, if you want to join, I'm asking you to follow the class that I've taken the time out to arrange and present. Okay, I appreciate that. Let's stick to the questions that we're arranging. At another point, or if you want, you could email me privately, Nishar. Okay, AI in Arizona. What would be the difference between observing Sabbath and the whole law? AI, just clarify what you're asking. Ephraim, welcome from Canada. I guess you're asking AI about why a Gentile cannot observe the Sabbath. Maybe you could just clarify your question again. AI in Arizona, okay? Okay, anybody else as well? What we're trying to do is understand what your concerns are if you're not observant or if you don't know what it really means. The first thing that we have discussed is to show how Judaism is not based on blind faith like every other religion. It's just based on belief that certain things happened or belief that miracles took place. And we've shown how they're just the word of a few people, and that's not any basis for you to live your entire life based on just belief because it feels good or it sounds good. You don't do that in other areas of your life. You do not let a person do surgery on you unless you are 100% clear that that person is a doctor. Now, if you will not subjugate your body to any type of danger, well, your body's only here 80 years maybe. Now, what about your soul? You have a part of you that has a soul, and that has the ability to live. Even the non-Jewish philosophers agree that the soul is something which can outlive the body. Death on earth is only to the physical part of us, but we have a soul. Okay, AI, you're saying correct that you want to know why the non-Jew can't keep the Sabbath. I'm explaining that the non-Jew cannot keep the Sabbath because if he would, then he would appear as a Jew. And then other people would approach him and ask him questions about what the Torah means on this or that. Now, since he's not fit to explain because he hasn't studied, but he only looks like the Jew because he's keeping the Sabbath, he's now going to hurt other people because he will give them false answers. So therefore, God does not want there to be a person that is parading as a Jew when he really is not. So you can, a non-Jew can keep pretty much all the laws, or if he converts, he can keep every law. But the reason is because God wants the entire world to have the ones who are educated in the laws to teach the laws. So when the rest of the world sees the Jew not working on Saturday, as Maimonides says, then they will approach him and ask him, how come you're not working and everybody else is? That gives the Jew an opportunity to respond and educate the non-Jew that we are now mimicking the Creator who rested on the seventh day. That's why we're not working. So we could now educate people on the existence of God, and since we have all these laws that we must keep, we must have studied them. And now we're better educators than the non-Jew, who doesn't have the obligation. So who is better off to be the teacher to the world, the one who now has the obligation or the one who doesn't? So therefore, God said, don't keep the Sabbath unless you want to observe all the laws, then you could do it. So God's not taking that away from the non-Jew. He's just saying, unless you agree to all the laws, which I'm not mandating on you, I'm only mandating this big obligation on the Jew. But if you want to take that, you can share in that as well. And again, our greatest leaders came from non-Jews. So the Torah's philosophy is not that a Jew is any better. It's just a different obligation we have right now because of God's plan. Eventually, everybody will see the truth. And that's our wish. As Jews, we pray for this three times a day, that every single person sees it. Okay, other questions on screen. Let me take three in Minnesota. I am observant 14 years, but we only have Lubavitcher here. Among the issues that concern me is the idea that we need to do things beyond the letter of the law. Meaning the rabbi spoke about the man who jumped onto the subway tracks, not considering his own life for the possible chance to save another. This is called a mysterious nefesh, a person who does more than it was demanded. Okay. I get bombarded with calls to help others without thinking of oneself, but many seem to take advantage of people who do good. I am often in situations to help others who aren't helping themselves. What to do? Well, you can't sacrifice your own life for somebody else. You're not allowed to. So the man who jumped on the tracks, it may have been heroic, according to Jewish law. If he was actually risking his life, he was going against what God says. Okay, you're not allowed, because the Torah says, who says that the other person's blood is redder than yours? You are the only person that are living your life, and God wants you to have that life. So if you could save a person without risking yours, very good. All right, and maybe that's what this man saw. He saw that he was able to save this person and himself. In terms of other people who they bombard you with calls, and they can't take care of themselves, and they're taking advantage of you, educate them. Show them how, just like you can live your life and you can make a living for yourself, show them that they can do it as well. That's what King Solomon said to the people that are lazy. He says, look at the ant. The ant is a tiny creature and it takes care of its food. And he said this to the lazy people because he wanted to show a person, look how many thousands of times bigger you are than the ant. Now, if the ant can do it, certainly you can. So that was the approach of the wisest man, is to show a person from example that they have the ability. So do that. Les is asking, why did the rabbis build these fences that are extra biblical? It seems to me that they have placed unnecessary burdens on us. Well, that's not true. God said in the Torah that the rabbis have the right to protect the system. He wants the rabbis now to see the law and to understand how it will play out in human life and to use their intelligence. But the rabbis have restrictions. The rabbis cannot make a law that most of the people can't keep. If they see that most of the people cannot keep a law, they are not allowed, and the law doesn't stand. Okay. And Nishar is saying, thank you for your answers. The chosen people are the nation of priests, for they teach others moral laws through practical demonstrations. Right. Okay. And Les in Georgia just joined. Hello to Les and David in Connecticut and Fryam in Canada. Okay. So far, so good. So we basically have step number one, that we know that the universe can't create itself. Something has to create the universe. And we know that whatever this thing is not of the physical world. We also know that from historical proof that there was a divine revelation only at Sinai, and no other religion has a mass, a history where there was masses that witnessed God revealing himself. No other religion has this. They have claims that they were written down 200 years after the fact. But if there were really witnesses that saw some miracle. If there really were 5,000 people that saw Jesus do a certain miracle, they would have told other people, and it would have been, the story would have started at that point in time and traveled through until today. Just like the story of Caesar started at that time, people saw him, masses saw him, and it traveled through today, and there was no alternative story. But the fact that we see that the story of Jesus' supposed miracles didn't take place until hundreds of years later, so why is there mass silence on those supposed 5,000 witnesses? Evidently, there was no 5,000 witnesses. On top of that, we know that the whole story of Jesus was included in their New Testament by a vote. You don't vote history into existence. If it takes place, everybody knows it. On top of that, you have the four conflicting gospels. So you have so many refutations of any of the miracles of Jesus. You don't have masses witnessing any type of resurrection. You don't have masses witnessing Muhammad with any divine revelation. The only one you have in history is 2 million or so Jews. The Torah says 600,000 men above 20, aside from children, aside from women. You calculate it, you'll have. And if you look at the numbers of the Jews 400 years later, in the times of David, you'll see that it grew, and it had to be that number at an earlier point. Okay. Okay. So, Les, write your question again. You're saying on screen that you missed the answer. Okay, just write what the question was. If it was regarding why the rabbis have the right to make fences, it's because that is God's statement in the Torah, that he wants human beings to see. He wants the leaders to understand the law and to transmit it, but only to transmit what the people can follow. Okay. Now that we know that Judaism is the only system which we have proof, so that it doesn't make sense to follow any other religion. Now the question is, for those of us that are not observant, why are we not observant? Well, now let's hear your questions. That's what this whole session is for. The session is for us to hear what your concerns are. So I would like you who have joined to express why are you not observant. Honestly, this is an anonymous venue, and you have the opportunity to ask questions, and hopefully I'll be able to address them. There are many reasons why people are not observant. There's inconveniences, and maybe you had teachers that told you things that turned you off, but let's see if we can clarify these things. Maybe you don't know what it means to be observant. But again, keep in mind that once we know that God exists and he says that this is the best life, and think about it. Once you agree that God exists, he created the world, he created human beings, he gave us the ability for such pleasure, he created in us the feeling of love, the appreciation of beautiful scenery, the appreciation of a good spouse, the enjoyment that we get from children, the smiles that he put on children's faces, the great tastes that so many foods have. He gave us the ability to figure out how to create homes to protect ourselves from weather, how to manufacture clothing to keep ourselves warm. Every turn we take, he is now giving us the ability for a very pleasurable, enjoyable life, but he now says that this is just a means, and the greatest enjoyment will be if you're involved in study, if you're involved in thinking into the laws, and what is the reason why you put black boxes on your head or strings on your garment? Why do you keep these holidays? There's a greater amount of enjoyment in the discussion of these areas, and that's what he's telling you. So use the proof that look at all the physical pleasures and conveniences that he has given to us. Like the rabbis say, the most important things that we need are free. Then what's the most important thing we need? Air. So air is completely free and most abundant. The next thing we need is water. So water is also free. It's less abundant, but it's very abundant. And foods and vegetables are the most inexpensive. And the less we need something, the further away it is. But you see how God created the entire universe in a manner where what we need the most is most abundant. Okay, he created temperatures that are livable. He didn't create a planet that's too hot that disintegrates the human body. And it doesn't make it too cold where you can't protect yourself with clothing. If you look, you'll see that everything is made for the purpose of man to enjoy. And if you look at the people who really enjoy life the most, they're really the people that are involved, like an Einstein who locks himself in a laboratory for weeks to figure out new theories, or King David and King Solomon. You look at the writings of the wisest people, and how it says that the kings and the queen of Sheba came and traveled all the way to hear the wisdom of King Solomon. That was the most precious thing. And she says, what I heard about you, your reputation was not even the whole story. What I see now, what I hear from you, your great wisdom. She was enamored by this. So if you're hearing all this from great people and wise people, then, and you see that God himself is now saying, follow the system, follow the laws, it must be that he wants it for your benefit. So look into it. Okay, again, if the screen goes blank, just click on the Talk Live link, which is on the top left, and you can just re-enter the forum. Okay? And that just happened to me. So nobody's immune to technological difficulty. All right. Let me just take a few more questions. Rosora is writing, excuse me if I insist on Sinai. I am willing to believe in Sinai because I can see the perfection of Torah. But the fact that I am not able to convince others demonstrates I am not convinced. So I have to keep trying. Yes, okay, fair enough, Rosora. Good. Keep thinking through until you have it clear and the wording. Okay, and the extra burden list that the rabbis are giving us is in order to keep the Torah system intact. If they see that the Torah is falling apart, they have to ensure that this system, which God knows is for our good, they want to make sure that other future generations have it. So if they say, don't cook Milton meat, if that's such a burden, I'm sorry, but the most of what they had put together is not difficult. Okay, and Les is writing further, I believe what God said about not eating certain foods. I do not eat those. I disagree with many of the fences. I do not believe they enhance my Judaism. I just don't see what the fences do for us. Okay, Les, feel free to write down another example of what you have a problem with. Chaya in Florida writes, why should we abide by rabbinical law since the law is man-made? Well, I answered that God said in the Torah to listen to the rabbis. Al pi ha-Torah asher yerucha. Those are the words, according to the Torah that the rabbis teach you. He says, this question, Chaya says, this is a question asked of me by a Gentile, and my answer doesn't seem to satisfy him. He just continues to argue what makes the sages know that Hashem means in the Torah. Well, God is entrusting it to the sages, so therefore God is now saying what the sages tell you is proper. So that is where God endorses the rabbis. C.W. writes, why can you wear some makeup on Shabbos? Why can you wear some makeup on Shabbos, but other makeup you can't? And why do you have to cover your hair? Okay, makeup has to do with if you're violating one of the laws of Sabbath, and like writing. You're not allowed to write. There's 39 types of law on the Sabbath. The Sabbath is supposed to be a day where we have at least one day a week where we remove ourselves from creative activity and work, and we devote our energies instead to study. So there are 39 areas that are written down in the Torah, that they range from cooking to shearing of the wool to weaving, writing, building, all these different activities. One day a week we are prohibited in order that we can devote our energy exclusively to study. So the goal of not working on the Sabbath is really to give us an opportunity one day a week to really engage a full day in to study, to understand what God wants from us here, to understand what's going to give us the greatest happiness. So we're not going to know what's best for us unless we study. A doctor can't be a doctor without studying for 10 years. We cannot understand and appreciate God's law just by doing it. Then it's going to be painful. But if you study it, then you can appreciate it. And the reasoning why the covering of the hair is that when a woman's married, she should not be trying to attract other men anymore. That will disrupt the marriage. So she does one action of covering her hair with a hat or with a wig, whatever she wants, just to do an act that she is now restraining that part of her that catches the eye. Hair is something which moves a lot when you walk, and it catches a man's attention. So by restraining or tying the hair down or covering it, you're now doing an act of limiting your need to attract other men, because now you're married. Nizhar is writing, Moses put on Moses put on Jesus and wrote Torah. I don't know what that means. I'm not sure what you're saying, Nishara. Unless you're writing, the Shulchan Aruch says about speaking bad, it seems you cannot be a witness against someone in a trial. This may be reaching, but it is all I can think about at the moment. So you're saying one of the things you don't like about the rabbis is that if a person speaks bad a lot, so you can't be a witness. Well, that just logically sounds like it makes sense. If a person is always speaking bad against other people, that means he's not objective. He's always trying to raise himself up by putting other people down. A witness has to be somebody who is objective, because the judges are looking to the witness. Are you there at the crime? What happened? Tell us honestly so we know what to do. Do we kill this person who's accused of murder, or do we let him go because we have no proof? So in order to be a good witness, you have to be somebody who is not a gambler or not a person who's so into the self. And a person who's so into the self, he's always speaking against other people. If you look into the laws, you will see. You'll be able to analyze and see why the laws make sense. There is not one law that goes against reason. Okay, any other questions? And three in Minnesota, just wrote one. I am supposed to help make a minyan. However, people talk during Shemona Esrei and Kaddish, and they are used to it, and my protestations are of no avail the next day. It is virtually a culture to act this way. I'm not sure what you mean. Do they say I am right? I can't ignore it and want to daven at home. Is that best? Also, I don't understand the answer about wigs because women spend so much to make themselves attractive in public wigs. It's true. A woman doesn't have to make herself look bad by putting a wig on. It's just the act of covering her own hair. All right? It's her own hair that she has to cover. So she's restraining her own hair. It's true. And the truth is a woman should make herself look attractive for her husband. Regarding Shemona Esrei, and they're talking and it disturbs you. Well, if you really can't concentrate because they're talking so much, so you can daven at home, right? It's only an added plus to daven with a minyan, as my friend Rabbi Rosenthal told me, all right? And if you really can't daven at all, and they're ruining your entire davening, so you're not achieving anything, so daven at home, maybe that'll actually send a message to them as well. I mean, unless there's a part of the shul that you can go to which is quieter. And maybe you have to just concentrate more. Maybe you need to concentrate more. If you see that you can't, and you just can't pray properly, so daven somewhere else. Find a different minyan, or if that's the only minyan. So, you know, you can daven at home. Okay. Let's hear some other concerns that you have. All right, Chana in California. I try to be fully observant, but there's only one reform where I live. I guess you mean reform temple where I live. And I can't afford to live in the city. I end up being alone on Shabbos. I'm not sure what else to do. All right, well, if you're trying to be observant, Chana, reform is not observant. Okay, Tzvi, my pleasure. So, Chana, if you're trying to be observant, there's only the original form of Judaism is Orthodox Judaism. Reform and conservative are just a few hundred years old. And but before them, what was the original way that Judaism came into existence was Orthodoxy. So what you should do if you want to be observant is to relocate yourself as soon as you can to a location where there is a Orthodox community. And this way you'll be exposed to the services and other people that are studying, and there will be classes that you can attend. There really is no, for example, there's no obligation, Chana, for you, though, to be in temple. That's really the man's obligation, right? The women and the men have two different roles in Judaism. So you don't have to be attending services. But, of course, it is better to be in a community where you have, you know, you have Orthodoxy, where children can go to an Orthodox school, and where they're learning what the actual Judaism is. Okay, so you no longer go to Reform. Good. But again, I hope to, you know, make people aware that there are many things that could be causing you to be reluctant to be observant. The biggest one is probably just ignorance of what the truth is behind the laws and what the beauty is behind study. All right? There's a tremendous amount of beautiful ideas. And it takes time, and it's not overnight. But again, be at least convinced in your mind that, like I said earlier, if the entire world God created for the benefit and our pleasures and what tastes good and to have clothing and the ability to create homes for ourselves and whatever we need is most in abundance, and He created this concept of friendship, and He created children, and He gave us such deep pleasures. So if He gives us a Torah system, it must be also because He wants it for the good, and it'll be something we enjoy. Les is writing. Let me rephrase my question. If a person were called to be a witness against someone else, if the witness saw the crime and had to tell the jury the evil a person did, would that be considered evil speaking? No, of course not. If you're a witness, you have to testify what the truth you saw. C.W. writes, will there be punishment in the afterlife to the soul if, as a Jew, you are not observant? It depends on what you knew. If a person knew that he was supposed to be observant and he didn't, so inasmuch as he knew he was supposed to observe, that's how much the punishment will be. The Talmud, in this, I believe it's the 7th chapter in Sabbath, talks about it. The greater amount of knowledge a person had, so then the greater, and he doesn't do it, then the greater the punishment. Chaya in Florida writes, I am observant, but I have a problem with kol isha. That means a woman singing. At my table, I want both women and men to sing songs. Last year, I was with friends for Passover. The wife sang with her husband, while I was expected to remain silent. I found myself becoming upset, especially since it was just the three of us. Right. Well, the fact that the woman can sing for her husband is fine. The fact that you can... actually, I heard a rabbi once say that it's not the woman's prohibition. So if the woman wants to sing, that's up to her. The man is the one that can't be in the room when he hears the woman's voice. All right, so you can enjoy the singing. But a very simple solution, I should say, is that you ask the guy to go out of the room for a few moments so you can sing and you can enjoy the song. It sounds to me like a very simple solution. But you understand that the concept is that a man cannot attend a forum where there's a live woman singing, because that's something which is attracting to him, and that is a law that will keep a man away from a woman that is not his wife. And that makes sense. It's a very important institution that nothing comes between a man and his wife. Okay, again, to those of you who have joined today with the questions, you can use our website. There is a search button on the left-hand side. You'll see it says search, and you'll be able to search for articles and to start getting answers to your questions. I really hope that you take advantage of it. So this way, the one life that you have, you're actually now making steps to see, well, how are you going to have the happiest life? How are you going to finally learn what is it that I'm here for? Why did God create me? What is my mission? What can I do to have the best life? And once you have this, and you have the appreciation, you start to gain these laws, share it with others. Help another individual that is searching to use his life, use her life the best way possible. I mean, life goes fast. And like it says that the rabbi say, you know, the day is short and the work is great. And the master of the house is watching. So the day is short means that we have a short life, a few decades. The work is great means there are many laws that God had given to us. And the master of the house is watching, of course, means that God is watching and writing down. And we should want to make use of this one opportunity. If we stop and think, look, I'm here, I'm created, I'm existing, I wasn't always here. Something put me here and gave me these abilities. And the one thing that I have that nothing else has in the universe is intelligence. Animals don't have it. Trees don't have it. But as a human being, I have it. That's a great gift. And I can use that to understand and to look into this world and to see what is my purpose in being here. And of course, we'll see that we want to be happy, but we want to know what's our objective. What's the meaning of life? That the profound question that we all want to know. But we have the answer. We have the Torah system. We know that the Torah was given by God. No other religion has that claim. Everything else is based on belief, blind faith. those religions are based on blind faith because they have no proof. So you don't follow something in life if you have no proof. Does that make any sense? Every other area of your life you will follow based on proof and rational thinking and reasonable thought. So do the same thing in your religious life. That's something which can outlive your physical time here. Don't be morbid. You can't be morbid thinking of the day of death, but that has to be in the back of your mind. There is a certain amount of time I'm here. What is really asked of me? And let me study into it. Let me ask the question. Spend time. Minimize the amount of time that you're working and put more time into this life, to understanding what God put you here for. That's what the rabbis say. Okay. And again, even after this class, you have the ability. You could write a question. You could email the website. But you have so many. There's a lot of articles here. You could read through them, do a search, and find areas that you're interested in. And ask the questions and get the answers and think through them. All right. A few more minutes and we'll wrap it up. So if you have any other questions, please type it now on screen. Otherwise, we're going to wrap it up. It's just getting the time to end the session. We'll have future sessions, but that will be it for today. So if you have any other questions at this point, please type it on screen now. Okay, I don't see there's any other questions. So what we'll do then is we'll wrap it up at this point. This class will be put online. If you'd like to hear it again, you'll go to the audio link, which is about 8 links down on the left-hand side of the Masorah website. You'll be able to hear it. It'll be called Why Be Observant. Until we do our next class. And Chaya, I don't know how conservative Judaism allows for gay rabbis because it's clearly against the Torah. They're trying to get acceptance by many people. That's all they're trying to do. They have no justification, just like all the other things they break. Okay. My pleasure, CW. Hope everybody else enjoyed it. Okay, we'll wrap it up at this point. I wish everybody a good day and a good week. Use the site. Use the search tool. Find answers to your questions. Don't leave it as something you'll do next week, because next week never comes. Spend the time now. You have a life to live. Start now. Start to understand now, fundamentally, what you can be doing to improve your life and what's God's will. He created us. He must have a great plan for us. Okay, Les and everybody else, you're welcome. I wish everybody a good day. Okay, we're going to end here. And we'll be in touch.